My name is Andy and I'm an alcoholic. And I can tell you now, this is rather an unnerving experience for me. Not quite as unnerving as my first meeting when I was in complete denial. You know, it's funny as I've cased my way through Alcoholics Anonymous, almost everyone I've met along the way has become a reluctant member. I don't think anyone woke up in the morning and said, "What a lovely day, I'll get sober today, I'll go along and join AA." It doesn't happen that way. And I certainly was full of doubts. I think the hardest step I ever took in my life and the most valuable was step one. Admit I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. One of the reasons of that, I've figured it out over the years, is that all my mates were alcoholics, and I didn't know that at the time, but I used to say to a mate who was trying to 12-step me, "I'm not a bloody alcoholic," you know, and I could tell myself lies and believe them. And he said, look who you drink with. And he said, I said, "It's Black Paddy and Letho Jimmy and Pipeline Wally," and I mentioned all these blokes. He said to me, "They're all alcoholics." He said, "They're the only people who will drink with you." And that was when I first started to see the light. Anyhow, I didn't go to think about going to AA. I went to the doctor. And he put me on antabuse. And when I found that if you knocked it off for 48 hours, it didn't bring you out in that violent reaction, I flushed him up down the toilet. And then I tried Nosahol tablets by the Henry Labette Company. And they made a glass of beer taste like a glass of spider webs. And you couldn't drink more than half a glass. And then I found if you flushed them away, you gave yourself a spell off them for 4 or 5 days, I could drink as I always drank. And I mean, this is how desperate I was. I think this is what convinced me I was an alcoholic. When I was on those Nosahol tablets, I found out if I had a cold, they didn't taste anything as bad as before I had a cold. So then I worked out that if I held my nose and poured the beer down, there was no taste at all. So I managed to get home drunk as usual. To give you a bit of background, my background, I was a journalist and I had rather a promising career in West Australian newspapers in Perth. And from there I joined the Navy, and that's where I did a very blossoming apprenticeship in drinking. I came out of there an absolute alcoholic. I didn't know it at the time, of course, but I still didn't think I was an alcoholic at that stage, and yet I was more often over in the Palace Hotel than in my office. And life was pretty miserable. In fact, it was bloody devastating. And nobody wanted me. And I remember I went in to hand in my resignation to the Chief of Staff on the West Australian Newspapers Limited. And I thought he's going to be bad, have his hands and knees and in tears at losing me. At the time I was quite a promising sports writer. And instead of that, he bade me leapt the desk to grab the resignation before I could withdraw it. And this was my experience from then on. I went to the Sydney Morning Herald, and there they've got a place called the Journalist Club. It's open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I really thought I'd arrived in heaven. And the stewards there were all pretty well trained. And I'd get over there to charge myself about 9 o'clock at night after I'd finished work at the Herald. And get myself pretty blind by about 11. And then they had all those big leather lounges around the place. And the stewards would put you to bed on one of those, and find out what your assignment was for the next day. And I'd say, Central Court, 10 o'clock. I'd write it down, and sure enough, you'd be woken up next morning with a big frothy schooner of Tui's, and you'd get into court half-charged. And I did have magistrates object to my condition. So it was not long before the Sydney Morning Herald Chief of Staff was looking for my resignation too. And he didn't wait for me to give it. And this was going on all the time. I got drunk the very first time at the age of 16 and a half. And then at 17 I joined the services. And within 6 months of that time, I was drinking jungle juice on Good Enough Island. And we used to get one of those big Dixies and top her up with about a dozen coconut juices. And the decaying potato peel would be in there. And you'd get a really wicked brew. And you know, that's pretty hefty downfall from a first time drunk to 6 months later drinking that rot. But it was whether I didn't get poisoned. But I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. And I think that, of course, that was the greatest problem in my life, was coming to terms with my affliction. And then I was talked into going to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I went with all the wrong bloody intentions. I went there to see what they were like and to prove that I was not an alcoholic, not to prove that I was. And as a result, I wasn't making any headway there. And I got a bit of tough love from those early members of AA, Dr. Minogue in particular, Matron Kessel. She hit you with the paraldehyde as soon as you hit the bed. And through that sort of tough love, I got sober. And I heard a lot of criticism during my time in AA of the drunkologues. You know, people say, oh yes, you go along and they just fill you up with drunk logs and hearing drunk stories all night. Well, I was one of those. And when I thought of Ava, I thought, if it hadn't been for the drunk logs I listened to, I would never have been able to identify as an alcoholic. And, you know, I listened to those stories and I could see so much similarity to my own that in the finish I couldn't deny a thing about it. In fact, the bloke who really convinced me was, I can mention his name because he's dead now, Vic Hartney. He rode Dark Felt when it won the Melbourne Cup in 1943. And Vic gave me the real tough love treatment. I went there to get sympathy and I didn't get it. And I think that convinced me because we started the meeting then in Cootamundra. He was down in Albury at that time. And that meeting is still going today. And that's 60 years ago next month. This month now, it's February. And now, a thing that I objected to when I first came in was the spiritual side. I found that God interfered rather much with some of my sinful pleasures. So I wasn't too keen on adopting that as a staff of life. But in the finish, there's no other way I would have made it in AA if it hadn't been for divine intervention. I was a dead drunk and I didn't want to do anything about it. And when I came to AA, the very first meeting, one of my misfortunes and went against me in AA was that I'm a know-all. And I have a swelled head. So it's a pretty bad combination when you're trying to get a bit of humility and sobriety. But fortunately, the higher power took control, and I managed to. I still haven't overcome them, but that gave me a good leg up. Regarding the program, what I liked about AA is there are no musts. Apart from don't pick up the first drink. But so you had to have a look at those steps. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We didn't all of a sudden have to say, well, I'm a holy Joe and I'm onto this program. And as you go on down, made a searching and fearless inventory, that's pretty direct. Admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I found that a bit difficult for a year or two. And then I went on a fishing expedition with a great mate of mine, Lloydie, who was in AA. And I asked him, we went up the Burrinjuck Dam, we'll camp by the fire this night. I said, would you mind if I tried doing step five with you? Hoping he wouldn't bloody well belt me in the ear and run. However, he said, oh, that's all right, Andy. And so I got rid of some of the rot that I'd been saving up. And I sort of got a fresh start to life. It's bloody remarkable how these things happen. And then I looked a bit further down the steps and I found there's one, even after 60 years, I still can't do it. That's step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I've never been able to promptly admit I'm wrong in my life, and I'm not going to start in AA. I used to practice on my wife, but then 10 minutes after giving an apology, which I didn't think was warranted, I'd be kicking myself in the bed and say, you lost bloody ground there, mate. You know, what chance did a man have if there wasn't some divine intervention? I was right off the program, and somehow I fell into it. And without doubt, it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. I know there's a time limit on this. Usually my wife was sitting in the audience and she's tapping the watch by this time.
Another 10 minutes.
No. I don't know whether I can go another 10 minutes. But, yes, I've met some wonderful people in AA. And as I say, particularly in those earlier days when tough love was probably the right recipe. Now, I remember going to a meeting in Young one Sunday night, and I knew Sylvester Minogue, Dr. Minogue was going to be there, and so I really rehearsed up, got off my little story in fine style, managed to inject a bit of humour here and there, and I thought he'll be bloody, he'll like that one. And I sat down, and instead of that he came up to me and he said, Andy, he said, if ever you lose your job as a journalist again, he said, you'll be able to get a job as a comedian. He said, but that's not the aim of this exercise, to big note yourself in front of an audience. He said, just tell the honest truth about the bloody, the mental condition you've let yourself get into and how you got out of it. He said, you share experience, strength and hope with each other in this mob. And I thought, well, that's not quite the basket of praise I was hoping for, but it was good. I've always kept that in mind since. When you get out the front here, you're not an entertainer, you're a recovering alcoholic. Now, I say recovering, I stress that, because we're not cured. And that's what I didn't like about it at the start either. They said, we haven't got the cure. We just arrest the complaint, which means that after all these years, I'm still just one drink off a drunk. And, you know, it'll be a terrible bloody loss now, you know, because I got back into newspapers again. if to lose all that there would be just too much for me. I don't think I would take it. And so I just have everything in life to thank AA for. It all hasn't been a bed of roses. I mean, there's been the ups and downs in sobriety, the same as there is in the drunkenness, but just not quite as vivid. I brought disgrace on the family name, of course. My old man, he was a very successful businessman, and I considered him to be a bit snobbish, and he didn't like me being an alcoholic. And I remember I went up to Jolton to stay with him on holidays at one time, and I was invited to speak at a Rotary dinner. And he was a dedicated Rotarian, the old man. And he said, "What are you going to talk about?" And I said, "Oh, I'm going to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous and how there's room for a flourishing group in this town." "Oh, God," he said, "you're not going to give them all the horrible bloody details, are you?" And I said, "Well, you know, that's what sells it." And I did. And I got a vote to say it was the one of the best addresses I'd had there in years. The old man never let me know that. So, you know, a few little handicaps. Everything in the garden has sort of come up roses. But there's an answer to everything. On the spiritual side, I did hook onto that in the finish. And whenever I go to bed at night, I make sure I say thanks for the sobriety that day. And when I wake up in the morning, I ask for the strength to keep me strong, to withdraw the, hold off the temptation to drink for the day. And it seems to work for me, and it's worked for a long time. So I guess I'll stick at it. I'm not a bloke who pushes the religion or the spiritual side down anyone else's throat, because I realise it's a pretty difficult thing to believe. I know I look back now and I have my doubts, and it's very like they tell you to love him, love God. Now, how can you love someone you've never met? And I had a bit of a struggle with that for a while, but now I try and love him out of gratitude, and that overcomes the spiritual side for me. Look, I think I've given you enough of that.
Very good,
Andy.
Good. Thank you.